Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th of April, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 3 minutes after the hour, where we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. We're going to start with the news.
I was going to say, I had to turn you up a little bit there. You were a little bit low.
Oh, I apologize.
No.
I could shout more.
No, it was on the headset.
Oh, I see.
The settings there. Some folks like to play around with the settings and, you know, go up and down and up and down.
And if you could do me a favor and plug me in there.
It's all that smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz.
Oh, please, don't even go there. Rob will be sitting there banging on my phone.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Jazz 90.1. We'll be playing you the great smooth jazz of the 20th and 21st centuries.
Yeah. Not happening.
And the phone starts to ring.
Mm-hmm. Off the wall.
All right, instead we'll do sound bites, and we'll start with a reminder that we are still in the pledge drive. We've only got $3,238 left to go. We will be here until it's done. So please, again, let's let this be the last time. Please feel the love and bring us all together. All we need you to do is to reach deep into your heart and then reach deep into your pocket and make the pledge. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Operator is standing by. Or you could pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And when you do pledge online, in the comments section, please remember to say that it is indeed for sound bites. And now I will do the news while you make the call. That's a fair trade.
Yep.
The Justice Department on Wednesday accused five of the nation's largest publishing houses and Apple of fixing prices on ebooks, forcing consumers to pay tens of millions of dollars more for their favorite titles. In a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in New York, the government painted a portrait of an industry desperately trying to turn a profit amid rapid changes in technology and aggressive competition from online retailers. In phone conversations, emails, and dinners at exclusive New York restaurants, the company's top executives colluded to wrest control of the market from Amazon.com and raise prices on ebooks, according to the complaint. This is all so far, of course, just alleged. It was this coordinated effort that raised flags for federal investigators. None of the firms have admitted wrongdoing, but three publishers, Hachette, HarperCollins, and Simon & Schuster, have agreed to settle the case. Apple is contesting the charges, embarking on its most prominent fight with Washington. Macmillan and Penguin Group have declined to settle as well. The scope of the Justice Department's investigation and the fact that several firms are not backing down are testaments to the intensity of the battle for dominance in a billion-dollar market that is expected to triple by 2015. A recent survey by the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project found that one-fifth of American adults read an electronic version of the book in the past year. The problem for publishers, however, is that consumers expect ebooks to be priced substantially lower than printed ones because they are cheaper to produce and distribute. But publishers were outraged, I tell you, when Amazon pushed prices even lower when it sold ebooks for $9.99 as a way to encourage customers to buy its Kindle e-reader. According to the Justice Department complaint, publishers worried that this would lead to lower wholesale prices for ebooks and reduce the amount consumers would pay for any books. Ultimately, they feared that Amazon's dominance in distribution would allow it to bypass publishers altogether and sell content directly from authors. But Justice said the publisher's response to Amazon's threat crossed the line. Starting around fall 2008, the suit said, they began meeting to discuss what was called the 999 problem and decided to act together to try to force Amazon to raise its prices. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is publishers artificially raised ebook prices. And the choices are, I, for one, am shocked. Shocked! I knew they were sticking it to me. I think ebook prices are quite reasonable. And I have no intention of ever buying an ebook. So far, we have 34 votes, and it's pretty evenly split, frankly, except for one person who thinks ebook prices are quite reasonable. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this. Holy moly, are you going to have more to say about this? So, when you're done taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath. Click Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can then enter your opinion. The question there being, how do you feel about ebook prices? And please keep it clean. That's also our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
What I find interesting about this story is that they're accused of price fixing down to lower prices. And Apple responded this week by saying, no, that's not true. We're trying to bust up the Amazon monopoly. We're not trying to set prices artificially high. We're trying to lower the prices.
It's an interesting set of problems. From an end user's point of view, I personally would love to have lower prices for books. I mean, particularly even when I buy a brand new book, if I buy an ebook copy and the book is a hardcover for $26, I'm getting the right value at $26 for an electronic version, particularly if it's an Amazon version and they can just take it out of my reader anytime they want to.
See, that's where you're wrong. You're not paying $26 for the printed book. You're paying $26 for the privilege of reading the book in whatever format you want.
Yes, I do understand that is their argument.
So, yes, so just because electronic books are cheaper to produce, that doesn't lessen their value. Right. And I suppose as an author, you might agree with that, too, that you know I should get paid for my book no matter. And in fact, the other big mess that Apple has broken out of Amazon, and what was it, last week or earlier this week? Amazon finally agreed to reverse their royalty structure. It used to be that when you sold a book at Amazon, Amazon kept 70% and gave the author 30%.
Yep.
Apple started it the other way around with their App Store and their iBook Store, where Apple keeps 30% and the publisher owner gets 70%, which everyone says is a little more fair to the publishers. And so Amazon reversed their way this week too.
Yeah, the other thing that really interests me is the resurgence in romance novels. Romance novels used to be just freaking huge. And then they got very, very low. People were doing a lot less in terms of buying romance novels. And now they're surging again because the reason is people are reading them on their Kindles and Nooks, and nobody knows they're reading romance novels.
Oh, good point.
So there you are sitting on the train coming into New York in the morning. And you would feel guilty reading that thing with Fabio half naked on the cover.
Yeah, Harlequin, what was that?
Right, Harlequin Romances or whatever. But when nobody knows what you're reading, I mean, you could be reading Immanuel Kant, Saint Augustine. You could be, you know, who knows? Right? But instead, of course, you're reading the latest Barbara Cartland. Of course, there hasn't been a latest Barbara Cartland in years.
One thing I got to mention.
Yeah.
My office manager, Sam.
Yes.
She now has a book on ebooks. It's a bunch of poems. Her name is Samantha Sloan. That's S-O-L-A-N. And she has a book up there, an ebook.
S-L-O-A-N or S?
Sloan. S-O-L-A-N.
I'm Solon.
Sloan. She's
S-L-O-A-N.
Yep.
Okay.
Sloan. I believe that's the way she... Wait a minute. Let me text her. She's changing.
You keep saying Sloan, and you keep spelling Solon.
Yeah, I know. I better double check with. But I'll get back to you.
Yeah, get back to
me. But anyway, no, she told me the last
Sam, minute. If you're listening, would you please
text me?
How long have you worked for this guy? He doesn't even know what the hell your name is? Jeez and crackers.
Hey, I call her at least by her first name.
That's true.
That's doing good early
Assuming
in the morning.
It's actually Sam.
Yeah, that it is. So, you know, since I suffer from craft.
Exactly. yeah, so. Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. It's a great thing. We would love to thank Jim.
S-L-O-A-N.
S-L-O-A-N. Okay, it is Sloan, and you spelled it wrong,
sorry,
but
Sam.
Pronounced it correctly. We'd like to thank Jim.
There's a silent three in there.
There's a silent three.
My butt's going to be in trouble.
The E is silent, as in knife. We'd like to thank Jim from Rochester for his pledge. Thank you so much, Jim. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, we are, and other beings listening to this, we are in a pledge drive. There it is. Thank you. We are in a pledge drive, and we don't have a whole lot left to go. So if you would help us to get to that goal, we would be just delighted. It's easy enough to make a pledge.
Yeah, we're hitting the home stretch now.
That's right. Join Jim this week and the countless others who have joined in the past. It's real easy to do. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And don't forget, if you pledge online, please put it for soundbites in the comments section. And let's not forget the podcast challenge that is out there. $1,000 for the podcast challenge.
He listens. Jim said he listens to the podcast.
Oh, excellent, Jim. Then we will add you to the podcast challenge. Excellent. That's terrific. So we're now actually over $100. That's great. I was hoping for $1,000 a week. Because there are certainly enough of you listening on the podcast, but apparently you have not managed to do that yet. I'm sure you will step up to the plate this week. However, we need your help. We need to keep this station on the air. You've seen all the things that are going on in other places, in other stations, both radio and television, and we'd like to keep this station happy, healthy, and delightful. So. That means we need you. Please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org.
I knew I should have brought my own screwdriver in. They screwed the keyboard back in crooked. No, you need a power screwdriver. Yeah, I think they drilled it into, just use bigger screws, drove it. This whole keyboard, you look at it, it's like a slope for, a gutter on a garage. The water's got to drain. No, keyboard doesn't have to drain.
Maybe one of his shoes is taller than the other, and it looks straight to him.
Yeah.
It's Rob.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we never know about Rob.
Well, you know how tall he is. You know, things could look different way up there.
I guess so. Distortions.
From a distance, it looks fine.
Yeah. And through his glasses, yeah, probably. Oh, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
1 degree doesn't sound very much until you get out, to the orbit of the moon or something.
That's right. 1 minute of angle is not much when you're right up against it, but when you're, 1,000 yards away or half a astronomical unit, it's pretty big distance. So, yeah. Yeah. Don't wait.
Yes, please. We're so close. And given last week, we were what, at 14,000?
Yeah.
At this time? To be down that much, over 11 grand came in. That's fantastic to all the folks that joined the family. That is super. Can't thank you enough. But you know what? Just a little bit more.
But that means with your help. We can end this pledge drive this week. But it starts with you. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. We've got membership levels that start at $35 and go all the way up to $1,000. If you can afford that $1,000 level, God bless you and help us out. But it doesn't matter what you give. It could be $5, mm-hmm. $6, $2, $10, $40, $10,000.
We'll do a payment plan.
We'll do a payment plan so you can pledge more, but it hurts less.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pledge at one of the levels, there are gifts that you can get. So please feel free to ask Steve, who is taking the pledges.
Steve was just smirking at your comment there.
Which comment?
Do more.
Do more, but it hurts less.
It hurts less, but more often.
but more often. Right. So you spread out.
Yeah, do you rip the Band-Aid fast or do you rip it
slow
over time?
But you know what? It's not pain when you realize that what you're doing is keeping the station on the air.
Yes, exactly.
That's not painful at all. That's a beautiful thing to do, and I know you people. I know that you've stepped up to the plate in the past, and we appreciate that like you can't believe. But it's time to do it again. Those of you who have not yet, those of you who have stepped up to the plate, thank you so much for becoming, again, members of the Soundbites family. And those of you not yet stepped up to the plate, it's your chance. So make that call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Pledge securely online at jazz901.org. We're going to take a short break just so you can do that. So we're doing our part. Time to do yours. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, if it's going to be a thunderstorm tonight, I'll be sleeping on the couch with the dogs.
Turn off and unplug your computers.
Turn off and unplug all your computers.
And your cable and DSL routers. People forget those. And your
right.
network switches. And
mm-hmm.
can still sneak in that way.
Yep. All of that will happen. All right, the government's decision to pursue major publishers, this is entirely separate. This is it from the other end, what you were talking about earlier. The government's decision to pursue major publishers on antitrust charges has put the internet retailer Amazon in a powerful position. The nation's largest bookseller may now get to decide how much an ebook will cost, and the book world is quaking over the potential consequences. As soon as the Department of Justice announced Wednesday that it was suing five major publishers and Apple on price-fixing charges and simultaneously settling with three of them, Amazon announced plans to push down prices on ebooks. Yay! The price of some major titles could fall to $9.99 or less from $14.99, saving voracious readers a bundle, including me. But although I mostly buy from Barnes & Noble because I have a Nook. But publishers and booksellers argue that any victory for consumers will be short-lived or short-lived, and that the ultimate effect of the antitrust suit will be to exchange a perceived monopoly for a real one. Amazon, already the dominant force in the industry, will hold all the cards. Amazon must be unbelievably happy today, said Michael Norris, a book publishing analyst with Simba Information. Had they been puppeteering this whole play, it could not have worked out better for them. Amazon, which already controls about 60% of the ebook market, can take a loss on every book it sells to gain market share for its Kindle devices. When it has enough competitive advantage, it can dictate its own terms, something publishers say is beginning to happen. The online retailer declined to comment Wednesday beyond its statement about lowering prices. Asked last month if Amazon had been talking to the Justice Department about the investigation, a matter of intense speculation in the publishing industry, a spokesrobot, Craig Berman, said, "I cannot comment." Traditional bookstores, although, of course, that's a lie. Of course, he could comment. He just won't. Anyway, traditional bookstores, which have been under pressure from the internet for years, fear that the price gap between the physical books they sell and ebooks from Amazon will now grow so wide they will lose what is left of their market. Barnes & Noble stores, whose Nook is one of the few popular e-readers that is not built by Amazon, could suffer the same fate, analysts say. Electronic books have been around for more than a decade, but took off only when Amazon introduced the first Kindle e-reader in 2007. It immediately built a commanding lead. The antitrust case had its origins in the leading publisher's struggle to control the power of Amazon, which at one point had 90% of the market. The government's suit, filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District in New York, made clear that the publishers were resentful and angry about the way that their relationship with Amazon had evolved. The retailer started out as a customer of the publishers, but became a competitor. Even as the publishers and Apple negotiated in early 2010, the suit said Amazon announced its own publishing program. So, who's worse off? Publishers, booksellers, or authors? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I just ran across an article on Scott Sigler's blog. He was one of the first authors to do audio podcasts of his novels, and he got such a huge following that he was able to turn that into a book deal where he does physical books. And that sort of set the trend. This was like 5 years ago. He set the trend for a lot of authors these days, where it's very easy now to self-publish electronic books and get your work out there. There was a survey done by Gallup that was published in The Atlantic this week on people who are reading books. And the chart is backwards for some reason. You know, now is here and then.
Yeah,
Because you're looking at it and say, well, the trend is going down. No, the trend is going up. Since 1949, they've been doing this survey. And the trend is going up. People are reading books still.
I love that.
What it doesn't say is whether they're reading physical books or electronic books, but
right.
People are still reading novels. And he goes on a rant like Scott Sigler is prone to do. He writes science fiction horror stories and alien football series.
Yeah, you talked about it.
He says he constantly hears about people saying no one reads anymore and about how Stephanie Myers and Snooki or other Phantom Menace are dumbing down those who don't read. No, they're not. People are still reading.
People are still reading. And like I said, romance novels are huge again.
Yep.
You can see a lot of 99-cent books, and some of them have become very popular. The problem, of course, is that when you self-publish, when it's vanity press, the quality varies widely. But for a buck, what the heck, give it a shot. If you like the author, then you can pick up another one. Most readers, real readers, will spend a buck, you know, to try something out. So yep. A lot of 99-cent books are actually selling.
And Neil Gaiman actually had an interesting interview a while ago about he was completely against electronic books and thought piracy was going to ruin careers of artists and authors. And then his publisher finally convinced him to put one of his old books out in free electronic format, and his sales have surged, especially in other countries.
Yep.
And so he's completely reversed his mind on it. He likens it back to borrowing a book from a friend. Someone loans you a book, you like the author, you're probably going to go out and buy more of those books.
Well, the Bain Library.
The Bain Free Library, yeah.
Bain Books, B-A-E-N, Books has been doing this for a long time. Jim Bain went to all his authors and said, look, you've made all the money you can reasonably expect to make from this book. Let's make it free.
Yep.
And so there's what, 150 books in the library now?
From
free
big
books.
Name authors,
from
too.
Big name authors.
Yeah.
And so somebody convinced Neil Gaiman to do the same thing. I wonder if it was Jim Bain.
We find out.
Yeah, right. But so there's people are reading books more, but people don't have a lot of money. You know, we believe me, we understand that. But so if you can get it for slightly less, that's going to be a good thing for us. But I think that a lot of the people who are talking about this stuff are right. The reality is that Amazon is 60% of the market now. If they become 80 or 90% of the market, then they can say, you know what? Books are $11 now.
Well, even
the minimum price for a book on Amazon is $11. What are you going to do about it?
I remember as a kid buying paperback books, and I could afford them, you know, $3 or $4. And then my wife pulls out some of her books from earlier, because she's a bit older than I am, and some of the old classic books we found in the bargain book basement, you know, stamped 35 cents for original Asimov.
I still have some paperbacks that were a dime, so shut up, you puppy.
And now you try to buy even a paperback book is
no,
$8, $9. Hardcover books are $30, $40.
Yep.
I I refused to buy the Steve Jobs book in hardcover because it was $35. But I got it for Christmas anyway because I had the ebook version,
right.
Which wasn't quite as bad, but
still was pretty big.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. You know, I don't mind paying for content. It would be hypocritical if I did, since I expect people to pay for my content. But I think that there should be some discount for warehousing, paper, transportation, sales clerks, shelf space, everything else.
Yep.
And, you know, you read back in the day, right, when people were bemoaning the cost of books and there were no electronic books, people would say, well, you know, 60% of the cost of a book is in the physical stuff.
Yep.
That I just talked about, creating it, moving it, storing it, selling it. Well, if that's true, they could sell a book for 40% of the list price of the hardcover book and make the same money.
And as someone who works at a physical retail store, we run into this all the time, that one of our biggest competitors is online.
Right.
And it's very frustrating when you look at Amazon and they sell the same thing we are at below our cost, and it's very frustrating. And we keep asking our distributors, you know, because the manufacturers sell to distributors, distributors sell to retailers, and you know, how can Amazon do that? And the usual answer is they're losing money on that sale because they know they'll make it up on other things you buy with them. But that's something the small retailer can't do. And in many places, a lot of small retail shops have gone out of business because of the internet, because you can't compete with overhead. Okay. And it's one of the things I'm sort of excited about, the rumors that Amazon might be opening physical stores, because then they'll realize it too, and they'll have to price their things higher.
Yeah, or compete against themselves.
Especially
when you got to, you know, pay, like you say, the rent,
yep,
and the utilities, and employees.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But people like, I'm sorry, I still like to go to a bookstore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like to wander the aisles and discover things. The big thing about books online is it's hard to discover a new author.
True.
It really is. When you're walking along, you'll see, you know, the new display or whatever. But, and so that, you know, that's, there's an equivalent on there. But if there's an author that's been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
For example, I came late to the Terry Pratchett novels. I'd been hearing about Discworld forever. And somebody had told me they were kids' books. Well, he has published a half a dozen young adults' novels. But somebody told me they were kids' books, and so I didn't pay any attention to them. And then one day I picked up this book, and I thought, I read the back, I loved the idea. And it wasn't until I actually got it home and started reading it that I realized, this is one of those Discworld books. This is not a kid's book.
Nope.
I love this book, and I went right on. But if I had been buying them electronically, the simple fact that I could read, oh, this is a Discworld novel by Terry Pratchett, would have said to me at that time, this is a kid's book. You shouldn't read it.
Yep.
It's not for you.
I got sucked into the Honor Harrington series by David Weber.
Yep.
In fact, I'm at the end of the fourth book. There's one chapter left, and I'm trying to figure out how they're going to finish the story in only one chapter. Because I know there's another book, but each book is self-contained. But I was doing something the other night. I had the audiobook playing while I was following along in the ebook, and it was kind of neat. But I had to set the audiobook to double speed so I didn't keep jumping ahead.
Yeah, right.
But I haven't wanted to get sucked in to too many of these books, and I'm so busy with work and everything anyway, so I find myself forcing myself to go to bed an hour early so I can read in bed. And then, of course, last night, 1 o'clock, crap, I got to go to sleep. But there's only one chapter left, but I got to go to sleep because I got to go work in the morning. Crap!
I'll tell you what, though, if you've never read Discworld, I envy you because it's all ahead of you. It's great, 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 great stuff. Doggone it, that man can write.
Good reading.
He really can write. God bless him. I love the Discworld series. I think they're incredible.
39 books in the series.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll. Well, it's because there's 13 in the Honor Harrington series.
Right.
But David Weber's still writing them. So
right.
If I catch up, see,
well,
I did that with
Terry Pratchett has Alzheimer's, but he's still writing.
Slowed down a bit. Yeah.
He's still writing.
I did that with the L. Ron Hubbard Battlefield Earth series.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the ones he wrote after he died weren't as good. Yeah. I stopped reading them.
The 10 books in the series, and I was in the Book of the Month Club at the time, and every time a new book came out, I read the last one to catch up again. So by the 6th or 7th book, I read the first 6 books, and then, ooh, the 7th. And then they read the first 7 books, ooh, the 8th. And it got a little, like in the middle of the, 7th book, the main character changes.
Yeah.
The protagonist completely changes, and the guy we've been following for 6 books is gone.
Yeah.
That must have been about when Hubbard died, right?
Well, I think he died at 4, but I think they've had multiple authors since then.
Yeah.
And somebody just decided, you know what, I can't.
Well, sometimes they find, they did that when Gene Roddenberry died. Going through his stuff, they found plot outlines for dozens.
Yeah, he'd outlined a bunch of books, but he hadn't written them.
And what was it, Andromeda, and what's the other alien one? Just slipped out of my mind. Several new TV series were based on ideas they found while cleaning out Gene's desk.
Right, something Earth
Final Conflict.
Earth Final Conflict, yeah. And so that can be done. But I'll tell you what, Terry Pratchett, unbelievable author. I'm rereading. I've read all of them, almost all of them. There's a couple I don't have. And now I'm contemplating, do I buy them on ebook? And if I buy them in an ebook, do I buy them in the Nook or do I buy them on a Kindle? Because which one of those is going to be around longer?
Yeah.
So it's a tough call right now for all of that stuff.
And a lot of these early, especially early science fiction writers, influenced a generation of kids that grew up and made it happen.
Yep.
And things we have today, the direct correlation between cell phones and the Star Trek flip-open communicator has been widely publicized.
Yeah, we used to say the big difference between reality and Star Trek, except for the magic, like transporters, was they had no wires.
Yep.
Well, now we can have no wires for the most part.
See, that's Westinghouse's fault. And Tesla wanted wireless.
Tesla wanted wireless. He built Wardenclyff.
Yep.
But now they've begun doing transporter things. So really, the big one left is batteries.
Yep.
Power sources.
I was TED Talks. Have you been seeing that they're broadcasting TED Talks now on Science Channel?
Yeah.
Saw one last night with Bill Gates, talking about battery technology. And if you took all the batteries in the world, it would only last about 10 minutes of the world's electricity consumption.
Yep.
So we need a major quantum breakthrough. Well, that was my button. We need a major quantum breakthrough in battery storage technology to help the future progress.
Yeah, and that's the big thing right now is batteries. Well, look at your phone. You have to charge it every day. All right, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back with a whole lot more of Literature Today. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And despite what it may sound like, we are sound bites right here on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And he's Steve Ray. And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Those of you who are Apple people, we'll want to listen carefully to this. On Thursday, Apple released an integrated tool to remove Flashback, which is malware designed to steal user information that was estimated to be present in more than 500,000 machines just last week. The tool, which was made available as part of a security update to Java on Thursday, came 2 days after Apple said it was working on an automated way for users to remove the infection. Flashback is a form of malware designed to grab passwords and other information from users through their web browser and other applications. A user typically mistakes it for a legitimate browser plugin while visiting a malicious website. At that point, the software installs code designed to gather personal information and send it back to remote servers. In its most recent incarnations, the software can install itself without user interaction. Let me repeat that, you Mac people, without user interaction. According to Apple, the new tool removes the most common variants of the malware, as well as turning off automatic execution of Java applets on web pages, which is a beautiful thing. After being discovered by Russian antivirus company Dr. Web earlier this month, several security firms, including Kaspersky and Symantec, verified its prevalence while noting the infections have been in a decline. Yesterday, Symantec estimated around 270,000 machines to be infected with the malware worldwide. down from an estimate of more than 600,000 counted last week. Apple's removal tool joins a small number of other solutions created to detect and remove the malware. On Wednesday, F-Secure released a small piece of software that makes use of Apple Script to detect it and make any necessary repairs, while Symantec rolled out its own such tool also on Wednesday, just ahead of Apple's. Kaspersky Lab, which was the first company to verify Dr. Webb's infection numbers, introduced one of the first automated removal tools last week. So, have you Apple people upgraded yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And, we're not going to talk about this. We're going to go right to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I'd like to know how to connect an iPad to a PC projector so that I could use the iPad wirelessly for presentations. And is that possible?
It's easier to do it wired. The iPad has two different video cables you can buy. One is VGA and one is HDMI. So you buy the one that your projector uses, and then whatever you see on the iPad screen can get mirrored to the projector. If you want to do it wirelessly, then you need an Apple TV, which would connect to your projector over HDMI. And then the iPad would send its data wirelessly to the Apple TV, which would then send it to the projector. There are also a couple of programs. I know there's Mac versions. I'm not sure about Windows yet, that you can run on a computer. So if you have a computer connected to your projector, you can send the iPad screen to the computer, which would then show up on the projector as well.
So it's
easiest to do it with a wire, but there are wireless options available.
If you use a product called Splash Top.
Splash
Top, which is very popular, you need to understand that there is absolutely no security in it. So if at any time you type in a password to anything, it goes out in plain text to everybody in the room.
Don't want that.
No, you don't. It's a very dangerous thing. So you want to be very careful of that particular product. Good product, works nicely.
Yeah, it's a remote presentation product, but...
But if you were to use it... Well, there's multiple products. There's Splash Top, there's Presenter, there's... I forget what all the names are. But if you for example, log on, you can set it up to your machine, and that's fine, and you use a password that you change regularly, like every time you give a presentation.
Right.
But if from there, say you log into Google or you log into, anything, that password is sent in plain text from the iPad to the laptop over wireless, which means everybody who wants to can capture it and read it.
No good.
Yep, so be careful if you look at a thing called Splash Top.
Okay, so it seems like the best route is to get the Apple TV.
Right, the Apple TV is in essence a set-top box. You connect it to an HDMI television, HDMI projector. It has its own capabilities internally. It lets you buy things from the iTunes store. It lets you watch a Netflix video, and there's different sports networks on it. It's conceptually similar to a Roku box, but there's different content available. And one of its features is being able to send the content from your Mac, your Windows, or your iPad to the Apple TV, and therefore to your big television or projector.
Now, for that, you have to understand that it uses Bonjour, so it is not a routable protocol. You all have to be on the same subnet, which is generally not a problem anywhere except RIT. Mm-hmm.
If you're in the same conference room, what you could do is make a new subnet.
Well, and it will not connect to WPA2. It comes up and says, I'm sorry, we're not an enterprise product. You can't use WPA2. You can only use not even WPA. You have to use WEP or open. So, again, everything goes in plain text.
I've got mine on WPA.
Do you? It won't do WPA2.
Well, does it do TKIP or AES? That could be part of it.
Oh, that could be part of it, too. Yeah. But it definitely does not do WPA2. I have spoken to Apple many times about this stupidity on their part. They know it. I've said it to their faces.
For home users, that's never going to come up.
Right. But now this guy wants to use it out in public somewhere.
Yeah.
And so if you're using it at a place that insists you connect WPA2, which, of course, everybody should, and you should in your home as well, by the way, the Apple TV won't work. So
okay,
you have to.
But
I
just want to do a plain old fashioned presentation using a PC projector, but I just want to kick it up a notch and have the iPad in my hand wirelessly so you can move around, but move to the next screen or what have you with the iPad.
Yep.
And I completely understand that. I use it in my classroom all day long, but I do it wired because, unfortunately, all of the solutions have real problems.
Yeah.
All the wireless solutions.
Apple also has their own presentation program, Keynote.
I've seen Keynote, but I don't use it.
Yeah, you can use your iPad or iPhone even as a remote control for Keynote. I do this a lot in our presentations. We've got a computer projected to our big screen TV, and I'm in the room on my iPad controlling that projector, advancing slides. And on the iPad, I have my notes screen, so that I can see the notes of the upcoming slide while that slide is on the computer. And we do that wirelessly because there's a computer connected to the projector, which adds to the complication. But with either VGA or HDMI, you can directly wire your iPad to a television or a projector. And then the presentation you have on your iPad, you can show on that projector.
There are also a couple of projectors that will directly connect to your iPad. So if you went into...
Okay, could you name a few?
I think Panasonic makes one.
Okay.
Steve is looking them up, and I don't have those names in my head, but there are projectors that specifically do Bonjour that connect to iPads.
Okay.
And you'll have to look them up on Google because I just don't have the names in my head.
Then I'll Google them up then.
Yeah. So if you're buying a projector anyway, why not get one that already does what you want it to do?
Right.
And then that completely lets out a whole nother step. You just connect it to the projector, and you're on your way.
I've seen scanners that can connect to the iPad, but I haven't seen a projector yet.
Yeah, there are two, and I just can't remember because we're not going to buy them. So I just put them out of my head, but I know I found two.
Thank you, guys. As usual, I figured if there was an answer, you guys would know it.
Well, there you are. At least you know part of it. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Larry. Yeah, we looked into it, but then we decided we weren't going to go that route just yet because we're not the ones who own the projectors in our building. It's a different...
This is a Pico projector.
Yeah, there's a Pico projector, but there's a couple of real projectors, and I think Panasonic makes one, and I'm not sure who makes the other one. It might be Sony. I don't remember. What happens is if you own that particular projector, then all you have to do is sign in to the projector, just as you would to the Apple TV. It shows up in the same place.
Here's a PC World or PC Mag article that has reviews of 10 projectors that work with an iPad.
10 of them. There you go. I only bothered with two when I...
Acer has two. Casio, Epson. Epson has four. Hitachi, InFocus. So all the standard projector companies.
Yeah. So
I'll post a link to that article.
He'll post a link to the article so you can see what they are. And they come in all different sizes and all different price ranges. And it should be not a difficult thing to find.
An Epson for $369 or an Acer for $1,700.
Yeah, but what's the lumens and yada, yada,
there's
yada, right?
There's
a lot more to it.
You
got to
do
that.
A little more research. It's just like saying, you know.
Ah, the Acer does 3D.
Ah.
It's only got one lens, though. So there must be two splitters in the
prism.
Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But listen, you can help us out here.
Yeah,
we have a small problem. We are just a few thousand dollars away from ending this pledge drive. That means all you have to do to help is to make the call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Join Jim, who's feeling a little lonely out there today, and become the latest member of the Soundbites family. Doing that will assure that this show and this station stay on the air for years to come. I personally would like that, and I suspect you would too. But the only way it's going to happen is if you join the family. Become a member of Soundbites. Become a member of Jazz 90.1. Station is one of seven jazz stations left in the world. And so we would love to have you become a member and show your support for the station with the guts, frankly. An all-jazz station had the guts to put a talk show on the air, and at that, a talk show about computers
yes,
with geeks. But Rob had the faith that you folks would step up to the plate, and so far you've done a magnificent job. We're just so close to the goal, and you can help. For those of you who have pledged, thank you so much. For those of you who have not, please, please reach into your hearts and reach into your pockets and make that pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And of course, and I'm talking particularly to you podcasters listening during the week, pledge securely online at jazz901.org. But when you do, make sure you say in the comments it's for Soundbites.
And, you know, I mean, there's some great gifts that they can get, too, depending on the level that they pledge at. And, you know, I mean, we even make it so you can make easily monthly payments. And we only come to you twice a year. But yet you, me, and Steve are here 52 weeks out of the year.
Yeah, if Christmas or New Year's falls on a Sunday.
That's the only time. Otherwise, we're here giving you information that you can use to help keep your machine running better.
I mean, on a Saturday.
Yeah.
You do this on Saturday now?
Yeah, on a Saturday in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, and not to harp on it, but, you know, we're both, the three of us are cutting out, you know, 4 hours of our schedule on a Saturday.
Yeah, I went to market to help Elaine this morning, which means I got up at 6 a.m.
So your butt's
6
dragging.
6 a.m.
Yeah.
My butt is dragging, although it was really nice at the market today. Travel Channel was there today.
Oh.
They're filming an episode or a segment or whatever they want to call it, an episode about Western New York.
Mm-hmm.
So they came through.
The guy that eats weird things?
No, I don't believe so. We're expecting him next because
So they come by you folks?
No. They were there for all of 15 minutes. I mean, they're doing all of Western New York. If we get more than a mention, they'll just show, you know, the Rochester Public Market is the number one market of its size in the nation and blah, 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 blah.
The
blah,
entrance.
And that,
the entrance
exactly.
Way.
That's my point.
Yeah.
And that'll be it. And that's great. That'll still be great publicity for the market.
Mm-hmm.
We are the number one market of our size in America.
Yeah.
And mid-sized, there's only three, large, middle, and small. We're the number one in our market nationwide. And it's a great market. If you've never been there, you really owe it to yourself.
It's a
slice of Rochester. And if you go there.
Man versus Food has already been here.
Yeah, they were Bacampi's, yeah. I think, and they had the steak bomber. And definitely stop by the Flower City Coffee Company.
Well, I was going to say, aren't they going to start up with growing season? Like where they have,
Sundays? Starts May 1st.
Okay.
I think, yeah,
and then
don't
they
hold
do.
Me to that.
Then they do music on the bricks.
Yep.
During the summer months, I mean, for a public market, they do quite a bit.
They do quite a bit, but it's Saturday when the light. You know, it there used is. To be, and I don't know that they continue to do it anymore. But it used to be that every Saturday, you would find the mayor, the police chief, half a dozen city officials all hanging out at Scott's usually, but somewhere at the market. And they'd be hanging out together and chit-chatting and rubbing elbows and kissing hands and shaking babies and doing all the stuff that politicians do. And it really was the life of the city. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. It's time for you to make that call and join the family and keep this show and this station on the air. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Takes less than 2 minutes, assuming you're not an incredibly slow typist. So do it now. We'll get out of your way so you can listen to the stuff that's coming up and... and pledge, and then we'll be back for a whole nother hour with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 1 o'clock, and we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And as you may remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had a story about employers forcing prospective employees to give up their social media passwords. Well, moving to the forefront of social media privacy law nationwide, the Maryland General Assembly has passed legislation prohibiting employers in the state from asking current and prospective employees for their usernames and passwords to websites such as Facebook and Twitter. If Governor Martin O'Malley signs the bill, his office said it was one of hundreds of bills it had yet to review, the bill would make Maryland the first state in the nation to set such a restriction into law. Other states considering similar legislations include Illinois and California. The bill, drafted in response to a state agency scouring the personal Facebook posts of prison guard applicants, also could be a bellwether for federal action. Two U.S. senators, Chuck Schumer of New York, and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, both Democrats, have asked the Department of Justice and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to investigate the issue. Right now, we protect our physical homes, but it's my thought that we need to protect our digital homes, said Bradley Shear, a Bethesda social media attorney who advises state legislatures on drafting of the bill. Shear said federal law is indeed needed to address the problem because the internet knows no bounds. But while Facebook critics criticize the practice of employers, while Facebook criticized the practice of employers viewing users, employees' personal accounts, and civil libertarians hailed the state legislation, business groups, including the Maryland Chamber of Commerce, pointed out that there may be instances when an employer needs to access such accounts. So some employers say that what potential hires post on social media pages could provide useful information to weed out unwanted candidates. The bill in Maryland passed unanimously in the Senate and by a wide margin in the House of Delegates last week, and lawmakers successfully reconciled the bills before the legislative session ended Monday at midnight. Another bill introduced this session would give similar protections to students and student athletes, some of whose Twitter accounts have been monitored by college officials trying to prevent their players from posting scandalous things online. That one never made it out of committee, but Terrence said he would reintroduce the legislation next year. So, would you give your employer your Facebook password? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. You don't get to vote because you is you employer.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't count.
Yeah, but no, I still don't think that's right. I would never want to do that to my employees.
No, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it.
No. Not part of your contract when you signed up.
I might want them to friend me, though. How many stories do we see on Facebook about, called in sick to work so I can, go to the beach party or whatever?
Well, the reality is you can find out Facebook is a sieve. It takes almost nothing to actually find stuff about people.
And like you say, more than maybe you really want out there.
Okay. Well, yeah, and that's the big thing is that younger people today in particular, we old farts don't understand this, but younger people have no fear.
Yeah.
They post everything. They talk about everything. They just simply don't care. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, and our next caller is Larry from what? Dave's got to push more buttons first. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester. Is this the same Larry?
Oh, the only one.
The only Larry.
No, I don't know if you had one before or not. Anyway, about this whole Facebook giving up your password issue and all that.
Yep.
If they ask if you have a Facebook account, just say no.
Well, except that if you're prospective, you're going for a job interview, your prospective employer says we need your Facebook password, You say no, and they say if we don't give it to us, we won't hire you.
Say, well, I don't have one. Would you like me to create one?
Well, right, exactly. But a lot of people do, and I think it's an invasion of privacy. And of course,
obviously it is, obviously.
But of course, also many, many people use the same password on Facebook as they do on everything else. So if they give their Facebook password, they're giving their Gmail password, their Yahoo password, their Hotmail password.
That's creative.
Yeah. I understand, but you know, if you're in an interview process and they say, "Well, give us your Facebook password," say, "I don't have one, but if you want, I'll go on right now and create a Facebook account and give you the password."
Right.
I mean, it's
well, yeah.
But for those who do have one, and they already know it because they found it before you went in for the interview, almost
every... So make a second account for that. It's like you have a spam email address. Make a spam Facebook account.
I have like three or four email accounts I use for different purposes.
Right,
Just for that reason.
But most people don't do that, and the one they use is the real one, right? So the big thing is most large employers nowadays have at least one person who goes and looks at prospective applicants' Facebook accounts before they even bring them in for an interview.
So a lot of times it's about liability. You know, if they're going to get drunk and you know, do something that reflects badly on the company, we don't want them there.
Right, but the problem becomes if they have if everything looks good in the public end of Facebook, what's happening at the private end?
Right.
So they feel they have the right to know that too. I feel they can go whistle up a rope because it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, when you set up your account initially, just set it up with some cryptic name, like your name with a few numbers or whatever. Just give that to your friends and you have plausible deniability.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was one of the early issues with Facebook is we have our physical friends, we have our virtual friends, and in the early days of Facebook, there was no way to distinguish between those. And so people you marked as a friend now suddenly, you know, worldwide can see whatever you're posting, even though, you know, it's just someone virtually. They have since allowed you to separate that a little more, but it's still an overlap there.
Zuckerberg has stated, the guy who runs Facebook, has stated publicly many times that privacy is dead.
Oh, yeah.
He could not care less about it, and that everything you do should be public.
The expectation of privacy is gone.
Right.
You step outside of your house in London is the most blatant example where they said the average person is photographed 200 to 300 times a day.
Yep.
They have 6,000 cameras, you know, out in the streets.
Yeah. Cities in America aren't that far behind.
Right. And one other quick comment. You were talking earlier about retailing problems with books and all that sort of thing. And all the big box retailers are in big, big trouble because of online shopping. Like Circuit City is a great example. There's many others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a relatively avid investor, but I stay concentrated in certain positions. I would not touch Best Buy and have it for years with a 10-foot pole. Because the joke on Wall Street is that Best Buy is Amazon's showroom.
Yep. Well, and they've said that they're closing what 1,400 stores this year.
Yeah.
People
go there just to look and touch and feel, then they go online and shop.
Yep. That's exactly right. It's a real problem that
happening with more and more and more. Retailers.
There are apps which are technologically cool, but we retailers hate them. Where You take a picture of the barcode of a product on the shelf, and the app will tell you where it's cheaper near you.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool, but very, very frustrating.
Kind of the same thing with bidding for things online, a la eBay, et cetera. There's apps you can buy, the little programs you can buy called, you probably heard of them, sniping software.
Yep.
Where it'll monitor that item until the last minute and the last few seconds, and then it'll put in your real bid, your low number bid, and it frequently will help you buy the item.
Right. So it snipes, it watches until the last second and then puts in a bid for a dollar more. Right.
But so many people are running those sniping programs now that they're sort of self-defeating and they don't help any.
Yep.
But like everything else,
Yeah.
It's good in the beginning, and then somebody will find a way around it.
Right.
What's getting big now, but almost equally as frustrating, are the penny auctions. That
Yeah,
I bought an iPad for $12. Yeah. But, you know, it takes forever. How many penny bids do you have to put in? And the bidding only end, the auction only ends when people stop bidding. So it gets back up to retail price, and then, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Right.
Back in the day, those...
What was that? Tom Stoffel? No, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
That's right.
Yep.
That's exactly right. All right. Thank you, Larry.
Thanks. Bye.
Appreciate it. Don't forget, we're in the middle of a pledge drive. We've only got a few thousand dollars left to go. So please, please join us. All you have to do is make the call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org to keep this station and this show on the air. We're going to go back to the phones now. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York, who's apparently not Larry from Rochester, finally. First two callers were both named Larry, both from Rochester. And finally, we have a Sal from Fairport. What can we do for you, Sal?
Hey, hey guys. You guys were talking earlier about using an iPad on a projector, and I'm doing the same thing for a church. The only problem is I don't have an HDMI input, so...
Yeah.
The option I'm doing, because the projector is also up in the ceiling, is adding one of these little converters.
Yeah, I've been digging around on Google while we've been on, and I found several wireless VGA boxes. So, you know, if you want to carry one with you, you can hook it to your iPad and then the other end of it to your projector. Or there are several HDMI wireless options, so that you take your Apple TV, convert it to VGA to go into your projector. But a lot of problems I've also been reading are sometimes the projectors are mounted to ceilings, and that makes it a little hard to get the Apple TV up there too.
Well, there is power up there, so I'm going to have the converter and an Apple TV up there.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of, you know, it's going to be within the network.
Yeah, I did see a guy that mentioned your enterprise security problem, and he said, you know, so I run a Wi-Fi hotspot on my laptop,
and
make a completely different wireless network between the iPad and the projector.
Yeah, that doesn't work well at RIT because unfortunately, the Cisco network at RIT will actively kill any rogue network it finds.
How's it working if I'm doing WPA2 on my home network? Is it running something different, or you're saying the iPad doesn't connect?
The iPad will connect. The Apple TV will not.
The Apple TV on the same network.
The Apple TV will not run WPA2. I've been told that by every Apple engineer and technician I've talked to.
So what's it using then?
It'll do WPA, and it'll do WEP. But it will not do WPA2.
Network with WPA.
Right.
Because it is.
Well, there's WPA2 personal and WPA2 enterprise.
Yeah, we're doing enterprise,
right.
And I don't know if it won't do personal.
Right, it probably does work with WPA2 personal.
That's probably it, because, yeah, I'm running an Apple base station, and it's within the same network, because I control it through the iPhone and things like that.
Right, all right. Yeah, and so it's possible that if you're running WPA2 personal, you should be all right.
Okay.
But if you're running WPA2 Enterprise, which is even more secure, and a lot of people do, you'll find that you cannot connect an Apple TV to it.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sure. It's been a frustrating thing for me. I'd love to be able to give my faculty that ability, but it just can't be done.
Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet.
Give it time. You know, like everything else. I mean,
Apple doesn't seem to care. I mean, there's nobody I can talk to who says that's a good idea. Even that's a nice idea. We'll move it up the line or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, I get simply no. The response I get is we're not an enterprise product.
Well,
we're not designed to be used in the enterprise. So
they still call it a hobby. They sold 3 or 4 million of them last quarter, but it's a hobby.
Yep.
Well, it's just like that one year, and this is going back many years. I was down at Comdex, and the folks down there were talking to them. And, you know, they were worried about putting the stickers on the front of the machines. And I went up to this one gentleman, with Intel and said, you know, this is foolish.
Yes.
Hold on a second. You know, I says, how do I know that's in there? He goes, well, the sticker. So I grabbed the sticker up and put it on the other one. I says, now it's over there. He goes, well, most folks wouldn't do that. I says, you know what? What would it take you to write a few lines of code and you have built into the prom your logo? And when the machine boots up, it says Intel inside.
We said that to the Intel rep at a Frog meeting one time.
Yeah, there too. I did it, you know, a couple
yep.
times.
Yep.
And same with AMD. And they never took advantage of it.
Well, Intel does now. When you boot it up, it says Intel. Right. Some of them.
See, I don't even get to the, I don't even look at boot screens
and if
anymore.
And if a company puts the Intel logo on say a Dell computer, Intel pays them a little bit. If you put that Intel da-da-da song at the end of your commercial advertisement, Intel pays you a little bit of co-marketing money. We kind of joke that Apple uses the Intel inside as a warning. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple doesn't put any of those stickers or branding on the outside of their computer. It's just an Apple.
Right. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. So if you're on the line, Cindy, stay on the line. We'll get back to you in a couple minutes. If you're not on the line, you should be. But first, you should call and make a pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Dave, Nick, and Steve, back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. No. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. Before we get to the phones, let's not forget we are in a pledge drive, and it's easy enough to make that pledge. Call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. If you do that, you can speak directly to Mr. Steve Ray, who is taking the pledges today. If you don't want to talk to Steve Ray, you are not only an intelligent and right-thinking person, but you can pledge online at jazz901.org.
We could get Rob off the couch, and you know, so he's not lounging around.
He hasn't called us, so nobody's pledged online. It's very depressing. All right. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
I got an email a couple days ago from Yahoo. It says they're going to sync my mail. What the heck does that mean?
Sync it with what?
It says here, we have automatically added a folder called Synced Message to your email account today. Located in the left-hand corner, I sent to my it identifies mail. Open the sync mail folder. I don't know, and you know, I don't. I think it's for my computer, but I don't get my mail from my computer. My computer is so old; I can't afford to get it fixed or anything. I get my mail from my iPad. I can't find synced on my iPad. It's only on my computer.
Here's the deal. Generally speaking. When you sync something, you're synchronizing two folders.
Uh-huh.
So it wants to synchronize something on your desktop with something in Yahoo so that it keeps mail the same in both places, I guess. I don't use Yahoo, so I can't tell you exactly the way it connects from an iPad, but I suspect it does not sync mail from an iPad.
I don't think it does.
And so if it doesn't do that, you wouldn't see that folder on the iPad.
So in other words, I don't have to worry about it because I'm not using my computer to look at my mail then.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought to myself, oh, now what are you guys doing? See, the trouble is I'd love to get rid of Yahoo, but I've maybe got 100 things out there with my Yahoo address on, and I can't remember all of them.
Right.
I'd love to get rid of Yahoo and go. Well, okay, I got another question. Quick question. Okay, back in Gmail, they said something about I can sync all my Yahoo accounts to Gmail, which I have done.
Right.
Okay, now, since I have done it, do I have to keep my Yahoo account in order to sync it, or will it automatically go there? Because I'd like to get rid of this Yahoo account.
Well, if you get rid of them, there's nothing left to sync anymore.
Yeah.
So just leave them there, but you don't have to log into them anymore.
Right.
If they are syncing to Gmail, and essentially what you're seeing in Yahoo is an exact duplicate of what you see in Gmail.
Okay.
you don't have to log into it anymore.
Yeah, don't go to the Gmail account or the Yahoo account.
I don't. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Yeah, because it says, would you like to sync all your mail? I said, sure. You know, because Yahoo has been deleting a lot of my mail, so that's right. Why I haven't sent over the Gmail.
Right, and are you finding that when you do go into Yahoo, you're not finding new messages?
No, I go what I do is I go into all inboxes, and when I go into all inboxes, it has all three accounts all in one place.
Yeah, you can just keep going to that, and that'll be fine.
Yeah, that's what I do. Okay, that's what I wanted to know, guys.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Linda, of course, is a member, and so is our friend of the show, Jerry. Jerry has pledged a generous offer. Thank you so much, Jerry. That helps a lot. We are in the middle of a pledge drive, and Jerry has generously donated.
We're getting close to the polka, guys.
We're getting close. We're not that close, but we're getting close. So we want to thank Jerry. He has joined Jim in becoming a member of Soundbites and a member of the Jazz 90.1 family.
And Linda has entered the studio.
Linda, not Linda from Greece.
No.
A different Linda.
Linda Wildman.
Linda from the radio station.
That's going to take over for the German show. Which is, again, more great.
See, it takes her half an hour to get ready to wrestle George.
Yeah, I know it. it's a very tough thing.
After all these years, I'm surprised she's got it down to that little bit of time. But anyways, but it's going back to, you know, the diversity of programming that is here on Jazz 90.1. I mean, we've got the polka show that comes on before us, the German show. I mean, they just keep changing it up, and it's still one of the few stations around, seven of us, around the country, that still play jazz. And here we play 24/7.
Primarily jazz.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, you can get jazz during the day. During your work hours, or you're headed to work and you're on your drive home, it's all jazz. It's on the weekends and the other hours that, you know, they have the other various fusion programs and Bruno with his Sinatra of the Rat Pack and that on Sundays. And, I mean, it's quite a variety. But you know what? All this happens only because of your support. And that's why we need you folks to really, you know, we're down to the crunch. $3,000. And we can just get a few more folks to call in and get us closer to that. One, we'd beat the polka guys. And we could stop talking about this. And just go on to more computer questions, because they know that's holding some folks back, because we will always ask, are you a member?
Yep.
Because, you know, we offer this advice every week on how to keep your computer clean. We got the Security Tango up there that you keep updated. And there's just so much information that we put links out there for you, easy to find stuff. And all we do is ask you twice a year, you know, to pick up the phones and support what we do. Kind of makes me feel good when they, you know, the folks will sit there and say, yeah, I'm a Soundbites member. And as a matter of fact, I heard a gentleman last night was listening to him play, and he goes, oh, yeah, I know you from Soundbites. Well, thank you.
Yep. We hear that all the time. People at market stopped me today. Hey, are you that computer guy? Yep, that would be me. Oh, I love your show. It's great to... Shouldn't you be on the air pretty soon? Yeah, I'm leaving very shortly. Yes, thank you.
No, what you got to do is trip them up and point to Elaine. No, she is.
Yeah, she's going. Yes. She said that to me today because she went out. You know, she went out to take a rest and do some things and do some shopping, and it was just at the rush time. So she had been okay, but not great all morning. And by the time she came back, I sold just massive amounts of coffee, huge amounts of beans and everything else. She looked at the sheet. She looked at me and said, tell you what, I'll go to the station. You stay here.
Gee.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah, last couple of weeks it's been like that with me at the office. You know, you still doing the radio show? Yeah, I got to leave now. Oh, can you answer this question? No, I got to leave now. Yeah, but I got to leave now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just as I was leaving, there were a couple of people who I really wanted to talk to who came up, and I had to go.
Yeah,
Rich was there. Richmond was just coming up. I saw him down the way, but I couldn't. I had to go. I would have been late. Well, the other part of the problem is I know exactly how long it takes me to get here, but you never know how long it takes you to get off the market grounds. It could be 2 minutes. It could be 22 minutes. And so
that's still a cool place to go.
It's a great place to go. I can't believe there are people who say, oh, I've been here all my life, never been to the public market. What?
I tried going once. It took me 15 minutes to get into the driveway and another half an hour to find some place to park.
You got
to
go earlier.
I remember.
I was looking for you. I was supposed to be picking you up to get to the station.
That's right. I do remember that.
I remember as a kid, though. Now, this is going back quite a ways, you know, 50 years plus. Going with my parents, my dad.
Yep.
Get up early in the morning, go there because he'd buy, you know, the 50-pound bags of potatoes and that, you know. There were six of us kids. So, you know, buying bulk was the way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll never forget the first time going to market. What a cultural shock.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I'm hearing chickens.
Yeah.
And then I come around the corner, and then I see them cut the head off of one.
Yeah.
And they're snapping the neck of it and then cutting the head off of it and draining it. It's like, oh!
Yeah, they don't do that so much anymore.
They don't do that anymore.
But they do sell them still. I remember walking around with my daughter when she was about five. She saw the bunnies, and I tried to steer her away.
No.
She saw the bunny. She went over. She looked up at the guy and said, what's this one's name? He said, lunch. I hustled her away. and that was that. She didn't get it. Thank God she did not get it.
I saw a goat get.
Even those of us that like meat don't actually want to see how it's made.
That's right. We want to buy it in the store. That's why
it comes prepackaged.
Wait a minute. You said she didn't see it, but isn't she a vegetarian?
Now she is. She used to be a meatitarian until she went to college. Then she spent a year as a vegan. Mm-hmm. Now she's just a vegetarian.
Oh, okay. Imprinting.
She came home. She said, Dad, I have been a vegan for exactly 1 year yesterday. I said I would try it for a year, and I did. And now that I'm home, I want ice cream. So I said, you're off the vegan thing? She said, I'm still a vegetarian, but I'm a vegetarian, not a vegan.
That's okay.
I want ice cream, and I want it now. So we went to Abbott's and had ice cream. It was very fun.
Chocolate almond?
She had chocolate almond.
Oh.
She had chocolate almond.
I love going up on Park Ave.
I love hot fudge sundaes.
Well, I'll go up on Park Ave, you know, eat around one of the establishments up there, and then walk down to the Abbott store down there and get a chocolate almond.
Oh. Yep.
Well worth the walk.
Yep. So that was her thing, and now of course for her birthday she wanted an ice cream cake, and she's very off being a vegan now. She did it for a year. She said she would. She lived healthy and good and happy, but she's gone on to being just a vegetarian, which means she's added a whole bunch of stuff back to her diet.
Talking about eating and that, I know it's off computer subjects, but what the heck. On Fridays.
If you want to get us back on a computer topic, it's real easy to do.
Yeah.
Call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Say it's for the computer show, and we'll talk about computers.
Well, no, on Fridays we do lunch. Normally we'll go out and
do lunch every day.
Well, street meat. Go out and get street meat.
Sure.
Well, this past week we said, all right, we're going to.
Is that anything like roadkill?
No, it depends on where you get it.
Street meat for
where do
folks
you go
that,
there?
We go downtown.
You have to.
We quick hop on the street and go down to around, you know, Jiva Theater. There's a great vendor around there, a number of them around.
There's a couple of them around.
Yeah,
there.
And we like it, and we, you know. But
in Urban Dictionary definition 2, you may not want to pay for.
Anyways, we decided this Friday that all three of us were going to fix something for lunch. I chose to do dessert. And they were both saying, well, as a matter of fact, Dan's wife showed up too. We should have skipped the main course and gone right to the dessert. I made this eclair cake. So it's just a layer of graham crackers in this eclair pudding in between. And just then chocolate. More graham crackers on top, and you refrigerate it.
Oh. Elaine made two desserts in a row that just made me want to cry. One was a peach brandy cake. It was delicious. And the second one was slutty brownies.
Oh, yeah, you were saying about those. Oh.
It's a layer of cookie dough, a layer of Oreo cookies, and a layer of fudge brownie mix. So we, and they're very, very
non-fattening,
rich.
Non-fattening, right?
Yeah, very non-fattening. You can only cut little squares mm-hmm. because you think to yourself, this is the most delicious thing I've ever eaten. I'm going to eat like a pound of it. And by the time you're done with that little square, Sorry. You're thinking, okay, that's enough for now. It's so rich.
Like a good cheesecake.
It like better than a good. I love cheesecake, but this is just amazing. And it's just you have just a little bit of it, and it's wonderful. The trick is cooking it so that it doesn't dry out, because the cookie mix will dry out if you just.
Well, that's one thing I love to cook. So, luckily, Dan and Samantha wind up being my guinea pigs.
Yeah.
So you know, try out different recipes, and I do it on them.
Greg Tulane should give you not only the recipe, but the trick to keeping it moist.
Oh, okay. But I like another, I love the Wegmans kit book that comes out, and then all recipes, too.
Yep.
A lot of good selections there.
Yep, and the Public Market had a cookbook.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah, it's a real good one, too.
Oh, I'm
going to It's a real good one. I'm very impressed by it.
Huh. Might yeah. just have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Hmm.
Elaine's got two recipes in it, and her picture. Very nice.
Oh, she's a celebrity.
She's a celebrity. And the folks who did it did a phenomenal job. If you're looking for somebody to put together that kind of book for you, those are the people to go to. They did an incredible job. They did an incredible job. It was pretty neat.
Now, and they still sell the book at the market?
You can buy it in the office still. And I think they're still selling it at Wegmans.
Mm, okay.
They have a corrections list on their webpage.
Yeah, there were a couple of things that were not right.
We meant to say baking powder, not.
Yeah, right.
Baking powder, baking soda. I always get those confused.
Right, but and you shouldn't in the recipe. We're going to take a quick break, so if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. Call and make a pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Pledge securely online at jazz901.org. You can do it before we come back with Dave and Steve and Nick and who's on the line, Jerry. It's 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you
just having all kinds of fun over there. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I would like to thank Andrew from West Henrietta for pledging online. He joins Jerry and Jim. You can do the same. We are coming down to the end of our pledge drive. Help us close it out. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And listen, all you podcast people, it's not too late. Pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Say it's for Soundbites and join the family.
Well, Teresa there, that is a member that wanted, heard us talking about those, what did you call them?
Slutty brownies.
Slutty brownies. She goes, oh my God. She wants it. So I'm going to try to get Teresa the recipe
yep,
for that.
Yep.
And again, you know, another member of the family, and that's cool.
That's right.
You know, it's and one of the benefits.
They are sinfully delicious. We sit across the table from each other waiting for the other one to break first and say, let's have those for dessert.
Heck with the meal. Go right to dessert.
Life is uncertain. Eat dessert
You know,
first.
I did that one time.
My grandma taught me that.
Yes, she was
She's
right.
also the one that let me pour all the cereal out of the box to get the toy.
And grandmas
then, put the,
are the
then
best.
Put the cereal back in the box and eat it.
Grandmas are the best.
Lori and I, one time, this is just when I first met her, we went to TGIF Fridays. And, you know, the first time there we did the potato skins, and then we wound up doing a meal and then had one of those outrageous desserts. Well, we couldn't finish all their outrageous dessert. And she goes, the next time we come here, we're going.
Dessert first.
No, we wound up doing the potato skins, double order of those, and then went directly to the brownie.
There you go.
That's the and way we you did do it. And it was, that was always a joke. Well, just go right from the entree to dessert. Heck with the meal.
That's exactly right, because the entrees are so big and the desserts are so big, you don't really need the meal in the middle.
Yeah. Heck with it.
All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Well, I think it's more of an attaboy than it is a question, guys.
We'll take it.
Some time ago, I think it was in the print version of what you guys do, Nick mentioned something about Revo Uninstaller.
We do that all the time.
Yeah, that's one that I recommend.
I just recently bought my new Dell super-duper do-everything i7 computer and was going to load everything into it. I took note of that. I put Revo Uninstaller in first.
That was my suggestion. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I start loading all the crap in. You know how that works. Here's what happened. I got to a point where suddenly things weren't working so well. Everything was hiccuping. Nothing was installing right, and I had a lot of problems. And I tend to try and be a do-it-yourselfer, so I kept working at it but getting nowhere. Finally, I went back to the Revo Uninstaller, which, by the way, shows an icon for every single installation, which is really cool.
Yep.
It turned out that I had a problem with Windows Installer. and I don't know which file it was and how it got corrupted, but it showed 12 installations of this one particular thing. Every time I'd try and install something, it would say, oh, I need to go get Windows Installer or get this file, and here it is. So I put multiple versions of this in.
Well, that's the whole thing about Revo, though, and I can't stress it enough for folks. It keeps the registry so slim. It literally than getting bloated, because that's all trouble. All Windows does is turn off one bit. So if you install and uninstall, say, Adobe, say, six times, there's six incidences of it in the registry. That means when you start up your system, it's got to scan that registry. And it's going through those ones, even though the bit's turned off, it's still got to go over them.
And
it makes it longer.
It's got to load that registry, which means your load takes longer.
Yes, exactly. So by doing this, you're keeping your machine nice and slim and trim, and it'll run a lot better.
Now, here's what happened to me. I said, well, I know that's not right, so I uninstalled the last one, went all the way back. I got to the next, the second one, not the first one, second one, and it had some weird things tied into Corel and weird stuff, and obviously it was corrupted.
Yep.
I took all those out. I reinstalled it once. Everything is golden. I love it. You saved me.
Well, that's our pleasure. Dave's been talking about Revo Uninstaller forever, and we're all sold on it now.
Yeah, it goes on every machine that I build.
Yep.
And when we clean them up, it goes on.
Dave, I think I remember you from old days in Building 6 at Kodak Park.
Whoa, yes, that's going
way back.
Yeah.
One other small thing, and then I'll let you go, guys.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What floor were you on?
Let's see. I started out with E.J. Carroll on the third floor.
Okay. Yeah, I was up there with Tom Friday.
And we ended up in the basement, right? I was a sensitometer guy in the basement.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was up on second floor, and then I wound up in graphic arts, and then down third.
Graphics is the magic word. Okay. Let me get one more small thing in here, guys. The computer I bought was a Dell. I bought it on eBay. I bought it as a new unit, but it was one of these reconditioned things. Dell finally, when I got it and registered it, said, oh, that was sold back last June. So I lost some warranty. But anyhow, while I'm going through my problem here, I couldn't load the Dell diagnostics.
Right.
That crashed multiple times. I got hooked up with some guy in India. Bless him. He had good English. He was someplace in India. He spent an hour and three quarters online with me. Wonderful guy, wonderful gentleman, good conversation. But he finally beat the system and got the diagnostics to load. I've always loved Dell. I still love Dell. There's my endorsement.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, guys. Keep it up. Have fun.
Have a good one.
Right. Bye-bye.
Dell is a fascinating company to me.
Mm-hmm.
They have, over the years,
interesting,
been exceptional, okay, horribly crappy, okay, and then exceptional again. And it's amazed me that they just, you know, there was a period when I simply would not buy anything Dell with a gun to my head. But those days are gone. Dell makes good products now. Dell bought Alienware, which makes some terrific stuff. But it's been you know, an up and down kind of roller coastery thing for them. It's pretty amazing.
Alienware were huge boxes.
Well, they were gaming computers. When you didn't mind spending $3,000 on a video card.
Yeah. Well, the way they also impress people is, like you said, they make these massive boxes and then they put the neon lights in it.
Right.
Even though it did squat. As far as the lights, it didn't make the machine go anywhere. Yeah. Oh, I got this big gaming machine. Yeah. And you paid for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they do make terrific gaming machines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they just make terrific gaming machines.
Yeah, they're going out there.
I'm teaching a class over in the Golisano building, and about half my students, maybe a little more, are gaming students. And they've all got very high-end boxes. Partially because, of course, they're geeks and they want them, but significantly because, well, that's what they do for their classes. They write those programs and things, and they have to have a fast machine to run them on. They still are beautiful, beautiful boxes. And if you're gonna buy a high end machine, that's a pretty darn good. But it's horribly expensive. The average individual doesn't need half of what those things do.
Mm-mm.
So you've got to buy what you need, not what you're, you know, what cool thing you'd like to have. So, but they are nice boxes. And listen, you've still got a couple minutes to get in on this deal. If you give us a call right now at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We will take your information and make you a member of the Soundbites family. You can also do it by pledging securely online at jazz901.org. It would have been nice this week to have beaten the polka guys. And you could help us do that.
Yeah, we still got a few minutes.
Making the call. And more importantly, you can keep us on the air and keep us
Steve
coming
is awful
every
red.
Week. I did not say that, did I? Good. It's Steve. It's Steve. He's been good for weeks. He's been good for weeks.
You know, at times, I don't miss not being in between you two guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because my butt would be on the floor looking over at his stuff.
He's been good for weeks. He's been sitting on the edge of the gutter, but he's been out in the daylight, and he's just fallen
right now.
Through the drain into the sewer, and that's fine.
I tried to get to the Alienware website, and the minute we started talking about it, it just now loaded.
It's a huge. What's
you have to have a high end Alienware gaming computer to get to their website.
That's exactly right. That's all. That's right. That's their market. They understand it. They truly do understand it.
I don't want
to
go.
But we need you to give us a call. We need you to become a member of the Soundbites family. We'd like to end this pledge drive, and only you can make that happen. We can't do it. So give us a call. It's very simple, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You can also pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Just make sure that in the comments you say it's for Soundbites. And I know that there are a lot of you on the road who every week say, oh, I'll pledge when I get home, and then the next week you hear us ask again, and it's, I forgot. You can do it anytime, from anywhere, and all you people listening to the podcast, let's be honest, you fell down on the podcast challenge. You really, really fell down on the podcast challenge. We made as much money today as you have brought in on the podcast challenge, but that's all right. That's the important thing is that you've become a member, and we appreciate that. It is the reason we do this, because we know that so many of you appreciate what happens here. You show that appreciation by making that pledge, becoming a member of the Soundbites family, keeping this show and this station on the air. It really comes down to that. And we want to thank this week Andrew, Jerry, and Jim, who all pledged. So thank you very, very much. We're done for the week. Linda Wildman is in next. Oh, yeah, and George is with her. He'll be spinning some of the great, great German music of the last and this century, and possibly the one before. I don't think so. I think, and the one before, too. All right. So it's going to be all kinds of stuff. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.